You're listening to Gillespie Excellence in Internet Radio, only on FTRradio.com.
And welcome to Gillespie here on this Tuesday night in FTR Radio Excellence. I am your host, Josh Gillespie. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. With me is the Gillespie crew. First, we got Mark Warner on the cell phone.
Yeah. Can you feel it, baby? I can too.
It's that time again. The time where we bring the best from the Midwest and Rhino goodness. He's cute. He's cuddly. He won't take a position to save his life. It's Mark Warner!
We came here at 6 o'clock in the morning, 5:30 to see them, and all they do is push you farther and farther away. And then they don't even let you see them.
How you doing, Mark?
I'm tired.
You know, it's we don't get you too often on the Skypes, but I'm glad at least we get you in the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, our newest addition, we're still proud to have her. Hopefully she's still proud to be around us, is the Smoozy Q, Susie Moore. How you doing, Susie?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Well, I'm just doing just dandy.
Mark, I need booze.
That's become a regular thing with you, Mark.
Oh. Don't judge me, Josh Gillespie.
Poor Mark.
Well, Mark, you were telling us off the air here just before we started that you had quite the weekend. You put in a lot of man hours.
I spent most of my day on phone for the Pence campaign, the Murdoch campaign, and Carlos May. And then I went and worked the state Republican booth out at the state fair.
Wow.
That night, and then I got home and had to clean out my truck because the next day I was going to the Strassenfest down in Jasper, Indiana, the big German festival, and we had to walk with two elk for men. So it was a 2.5-hour drive for me, so I had to leave early, get down there, help get set up, do the parade, and then tear down stuff and drive back.
Wow.
I'm tired. Nuts.
And then today I did something different, but I was out of the office, but we will not discuss what I did. Let's just say I got fried today because I left my sunscreen inside of Pence's truck.
Oh my goodness.
So, yeah, I got fried today. And, Josh, you know me well enough that you've seen me before and fried, and it's not a pretty sight.
It is not. You blister. You blister bad.
And it wears me out because even though I've lived with it all of my life, it's still the sun chokes me.
Well, it's because
it's not bad if I don't get burnt. It's not as bad, but if I get burnt, it just takes everything out of me.
Well, it's because you're a ginger, Mark.
That's right.
Shut up, Josh. Do not call me a ginger. I will come through this phone, through that computer of yours, and choke you.
You're a damn ginger, and all I can think about is the episode of South Park where Cartman tries
you,
to get rid of the
ginger. I completely hate you right now. I hate you, Josh Gillespie. Anyway, I am your Susie, but I hate you, Josh.
That's nothing new, Mark. That's nothing new.
That is true. That is not breaking news.
Oh, well, Susie, we're recording this Monday, but we know that the day this airs, Tuesday, two big primaries, Michigan and Missouri.
And Missouri, the show me state, has a big day.
Yeah, you guys got a bit of a primary. What should we expect from what's going on the show me state?
Well, obviously the biggest story is the Senate race. That is a very tight race, it appears, between Todd Akin, who's currently serving as a congressman from the 2nd District here, mm-hmm. and then Sarah Steelman, who's the former state treasurer, and John Bruner, who's a businessman. And it's kind of hard to tell from the polls what's going to happen. I kind of felt all along that Akin probably had the edge just because of his name recognition, and he's been a pretty solid conservative, mm-hmm. Got a good record to run on. But Steelman has the Tea Party support, and she got the Palin endorsement, and Bruner's
really?
Got a lot of money behind him. So I think it's going to be a close call. I made sure I'm going to be on the road all day tomorrow driving to Chicago and back, so I made sure to get my absentee ballot in the mail.
Well, I mean, one of these guys sounds like a ticket splitter.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it's the John guy.
Let me ask this question. Who's the Tea Party supporting?
Steelman.
Now, she's run before,
then
though.
Then I support someone else.
Okay, let's. Mark will support Todd Akin, just for the heck of it. Because, well, obviously, since he's already a congressman, that means he's establishment, and in
That's
some
right.
way, he's already a rhino. So
never mind the fact that he's generally bucked the party pressure and stayed conservative.
Does it matter? Establishment, he's already elected.
Right.
No, but Steelman, is it Steel? Steelman?
Steel. Yeah, okay. A man.
Now, she's run before. I mean, she did not, she ran kind of a nasty campaign against Roy Blunt a couple of years ago, didn't she?
Yeah, in a statewide campaign. She's a former treasurer. I'm trying to remember what she was competing against Blunt for, though.
It was Senate.
I guess it was.
Yeah, Roy Blunt is a senator now. But
yeah,
that was like
that.
That was her second campaign, didn't she like run for lieutenant governor or governor or something there?
I mean, she's been around Missouri politics for a while.
So not only is she nothing against her. I mean, if she wins, we'll support her, obviously.
Absolutely.
But
whoever gets this nod, I will be out stumping for you, no matter what.
Yeah, I don't know much about Todd Akin, but I do know his name because I am familiar with the members who are elected to the House. And so I've only heard positive things about Todd Akin. And so either way, I hope that we get one of these guys on this show here after the Missouri primary so we can help elect more conservatives to the U.S. Senate because goodness knows we need them.
I think we should. And then the congressional race that's heating up, I think Ann Wagner probably has the advantage there. She should get the nod, but then she'll have a little bit of a fight on her hands as well.
Who is she running? Is she running for Akin's seat?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So it's make it or break it for Todd Akin.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Well, it's good to know that we have another female conservative possibly entering the House, depending on how the general shakes out. But
true.
Always happy to have more female conservatives in the U.S. House of Representatives.
They're a fine bunch.
They are a fine bunch. And goodness knows that, you know, hopefully she's elected. We get her to the next Smart Girl Summit.
That'd be great. She was at the one last year in St. Louis. That's when I met her.
Hey. Well. Goodness knows. Like I said, lots of smart girls out there. They're all getting elected to the U.S. House.
Yep.
Good times. Well, speaking of the U.S. House, our guests coming up, one currently resides as a congressman from the U.S. House. That is Mike Pence. He is running for Indiana governor. Mark knows all about Mike Pence. Mark, you're getting phone calls from Mike Pence, aren't you? Why the heck he wants you working on his campaign?
It's not Mike, but it's others, but yeah.
And then after that, we talk with a U.S. Senate candidate, also from Indiana, Richard Murdoch. He was at FreePAC a couple weeks ago in Dallas. Rasmussen recently came out with a poll. He's in a statistical tie here in Indiana with a Democrat. Guys, we got to be paying attention to that race with Richard Murdoch Joe Donnelly.
Gosh, we're too focused on what companies think about issues. I mean,
I know. And then after that, we talk with Pete Seat. He is a former press secretary for President George W. Bush. He is currently the Indiana communications director for the Indiana State GOP. So, guys, we have a jam-packed show. Stick around. We're going to be talking with Mike Pence coming up next. You're listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back after this.
FTR Radio is from the right radio, online at FTRradio.com.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. With Susie and me during this segment, we have a guest he was my very first interview with Hoosier Access when we first launched in 2007. I'm pleased to have him back because it's been a long time since I've talked with him. Congressman Mike Pence, how are you doing, sir?
Hi, Josh. I'm doing great. Great to be with you and Susie. And wow, I didn't know I had the honor of being your very first interview.
You were. I know you may not know that, but it was actually during the Midwest Leadership Conference when it came.
I remember
through,
it. When up it on came the to stage.
Us, yes, you were my first interview, and then Mike Sodrill was my second interview.
That's great. I'm honored.
Well, I am thrilled. So I thank you for coming back. A lot has happened since 2007. You're actually running for a completely different office this time. You're running for governor of Indiana.
I am, and we couldn't be more honored and more excited as a family to have the chance to be the Republican nominee for governor of the state of Indiana. We've got about 3 months left to go to Election Day, but we're working hard and encouraged by the support we're receiving all over the state, and even more encouraged by the response that we're getting for a positive, substantive message about how we build an even better Indiana.
I have to make a quick confession. Every time I hear you say the word encouraged, I think of your impression of former President Bush that you did at CPAC a couple of years ago about how you felt encouraged by President Bush.
Well, it was a great experience to be in the Oval Office with the president, talking about some legislation that we were working on. He'd taken an interest in it. I can never resist telling the story about how the president went out of his way to set me at ease.
I wanted to ask you, what led you to the decision to run for governor of Indiana?
Oh, really? I'm running for governor of Indiana for two reasons. Number one is I love this state. I love everything about it. I'm a lifelong Hoosier. I was born and raised in Columbus, Indiana. I went to college and to law school in the Hoosier State, raised a family, built a business, and I've had the privilege to have a career representing Indiana and Washington, D.C. So I really can think of no higher privilege or honor than serving as governor of the state that I love. But the second reason I'm running for governor is because I think this is no ordinary time in the life of our state. I truly believe Indiana's on the verge of an era of growth and opportunity like no other in our lifetime, that if we'll produce the right leaders at every level with the right ideas, I believe that Indiana will take her rightful place as the leading state in the Midwest and one of the fastest growing state economies in America. But it's not just going to happen. We're going to have to bring forward the right leadership with the right priorities and the right energy. And it's very exciting and very humbling for me to think that we can be a part of that in the days ahead.
Well, you recently rolled out some economic and education initiatives. And when I think of Indiana, I think of a state that is with the past 8 years under the leadership of Governor Mitch Daniels, Indiana has moved from a state that was in the red. And we had bloated budgets. We did not have a budget surplus. We did not even have a balanced budget, but we've had, I believe, three balanced budgets, maybe four balanced budgets under Governor Mitch Daniels. We now have a $2 billion surplus. Indiana is in a really good spot, most would assume. But this week, you rolled out an even bigger tax plan to slash Indiana's income tax by 10% over the next 2 years. When people think of Indiana as a solid tax place, what led you to put forth that kind of economic initiative?
Well, first, let me agree with everything you said about the progress that we've made over the last 8 years. I think Mitch Daniels is the best governor in America, and in partnership with our leaders in the Indiana State House, this governor has managed to balance the books without raising taxes. He reversed a $700 million debt that he inherited from the last administration. Cap property taxes, cut business taxes, reformed our schools by expanding school choice, and Indiana has now become the first industrialized Midwestern state to respect the right to work in the law. That's all measurable progress, but the truth is, Josh, we're not there yet. As we speak here today on your program, 255,000 Hoosiers are out of work. We have an 8% unemployment rate, and quite frankly, a number of our schools are continuing to struggle. Even though graduation rates are going up and test scores are going up, we've got a ways to go. And so what we wanted to say was in this campaign, we believe Indiana can become the state that works. We believe we can be a model state, but it's going to take bringing forward fresh, new ideas that'll take Indiana to the next level. And we think the centerpiece of that, with more than a $2 billion budget surplus, is to let Hoosiers keep more of their hard-earned tax dollars by enacting an across-the-board 10% cut in the state income tax. We've got a proposal to freeze any new regulations. We've also got a proposal about vocational education I'd love to talk about. But the centerpiece of how we think we get Indiana growing again is by letting not only Hoosier taxpayers, but small business owners and family farmers who file as individuals that realize more of their hard-earned tax dollars. That'll put some $500 million back into the Hoosier economy in a way that will encourage growth and create jobs for Hoosiers struggling at this time.
Well, you mentioned that the vocational education initiative that you want to pursue.
Right.
And as Indiana has been an industrialized state, as you mentioned, it seems as if our country is moving further away from kind of being an industrialized nation, especially Indiana. I mean, we still definitely have our parts of this state which are very much industrialized, but it seems like a lot of those places, in a sense, they're sort of dying. And there's this new breed of business, a different business climate being pursued here in Indiana. You know, we have the healthcare industry. Governor Daniels had a large vision to make Indiana kind of like the Silicon Valley of the Midwest. It seems like there's a lot of job change, especially with the recession nationwide, especially how it impacts Indiana. Talk about that vocational education initiative that you want to pursue.
Well, I appreciate that, Josh. Look, Indiana's economy is a lot of things, but at the end of the day, in Indiana, we do two things well. We make things and we grow things. You know, the traditional areas of our strength are manufacturing and agriculture, now come alongside with the life sciences and logistics. But I think going forward, we have to recognize that in those four pillars of our strength and new economies and opportunities that will develop around it, we've got a skills gap. You know, as I've traveled around the state over the last year, meeting with businesses small and large, I don't hear people telling me that they're not hiring. Often I hear people say, we're hiring, we can't find anybody with the background and training and skills to take the jobs that we're offering. And so what we're suggesting is that we would make career and vocational education a priority in every high school in Indiana again. I actually made a proposal about a month ago. It was the first proposal we rolled out. That we would have for a one-year period of time regional councils around the state of Indiana that would help us develop a local curriculum for high school for that area of Indiana. You know, say, you know, if you're in Columbus, Indiana, and you've got an interest in going to work at Cummins Engine Company or at the local Columbus Regional Hospital, we want a pathway in high school that gives students an opportunity who want to start their career right after high school as opposed to going to college. We want to give them a pathway to get the training, the background, the certification that they need to enter the workforce. Right now, we more often than not have our kids go through a college preparatory curriculum with Core 40. And then after they graduate from high school, if they're not going to college, we encourage them to go on to get an associate's degree or to get some post-secondary degree where they get the real skill training they need to enter the workforce. I think we ought to let high school kids you know, who know the direction that they want to start in life, be able to do that in high school. And, mm-hmm. and that's why we're determined to make career technical and vocational education a priority in our high schools again.
We're talking with Congressman Mike Pence, who is the Republican candidate for governor here in Indiana. Susie, you had something you wanted to ask.
I did, Josh. Congressman, one of the big issues on the table these days is the fallout from the Supreme Court's decision on the Affordable Care Act. And I know that a big question on a lot of people's minds is what each of the individual states are going to be doing with regard to the Medicaid expansion, the decision which says they really have the option of opting out. I know you were recently asked for your input on that by Governor Daniels, and I was interested in your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's a very serious issue. And, of course, I strongly opposed Obamacare when it moved through the Congress of the United States. I was disappointed when the Supreme Court upheld the individual mandate and upheld the Affordable Care Act. But I think Obamacare must be repealed by the Congress. This administration and the last Congress had their say. The Supreme Court's had their say. But I think the American people are going to have their say on Election Day this November. And so I think the state of Indiana should make no effort to implement Obamacare until the people of Indiana have had their say on Election Day this fall. I'm grateful that Governor Daniels has reached out to all the candidates to succeed him for input on how Indiana ought to deal with the potential implementation of Obamacare. We'll be offering him a detailed, written, thoughtful series of recommendations in the coming days. But for my part, I truly believe that this debate is not over, and I'm going to work tirelessly between now and November 6th to elect a president, re-elect Indiana's part the hopefully arising Republican majority in the Senate and reelect a Republican majority in the Congress so that we can repeal Obamacare and start over with health care reform that focuses on lowering the cost of health insurance without growing the size of government or eroding the freedom of Americans and American enterprise.
Congressman, I have, in the short amount of time that we have left, I just wanted to ask you a quick question. I think normally it might take you a little bit longer to answer, but your campaign ads have stayed positive, and they have focused a lot on what I would call Hoosier exceptionalism.
Thank you, Josh.
What has led you to stay positive as your Democrat opponent tries to seemingly goad you into a negative attack? You have remained positive. What has led you to take this positive route?
Well, I have always believed that that campaigns are an opportunity to lay a foundation for governing, and that campaigns ought to first demonstrate the basic decency of the candidate, meaning you ought to practice the golden rule. I mean, you should not do unto others as you would not be done unto.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing, though, is I think campaigns ought to be about the advancement of issues and policies whose success or failure is more important than your own. And I'm determined in this campaign to offer a positive, substantive vision for the people of Indiana that will lay a foundation, if we're privileged to serve as governor, for really taking Indiana from good to great. Lastly, I think campaigns can be about winning, and we're sure working hard to do that. We've got phone banks working around the clock in communities all across the state of Indiana. Myself and my running mate are working tirelessly to meet as many Hoosiers as we can, and we're going to go out there and continue to try and earn the right to serve as the next administration of this state. So I'm not against competition. I welcome competition, but for us and for our campaign, we're going to do our level best to continue to articulate a positive, substantive vision for Indiana's future. I call it making Indiana the state that works, and hopefully not only encourage folks around Indiana to support our cause, but also lay a foundation for really helping to take Indiana to the next level.
Well, we have been talking with Congressman Mike Pence, who is a Republican candidate for governor here in Indiana. He did mention his LG candidate nominee with him, who is Sue Elsperman from Southern Indiana. We didn't get to talk too much about Sue, but she is a phenomenal choice by Congressman Pence. I almost called you governor. I almost got ahead of myself there, Congressman.
I did the same thing.
You can call me Mike, Josh. I'll tell you that Sue Elsperman is an extraordinary leader. You know, I chose her to be my running mate quite simply because I believe she's the best choice to be Indiana's next lieutenant governor. She's a small town girl that's lived some great, great success in her life, achieved a PhD in management engineering, was in business for herself, worked for Fortune 500 companies. She's had a lot of experience in business and a little bit of experience in government. I think she's going to be a great lieutenant governor of Indiana if we have the privilege.
I'm anxious to see how you guys take sides in the bucket game, the old oaken bucket, since you went to IU Law School and Sue went to Purdue. As a Purdue grad,
I don't think there'll be any mystery about where that all comes out. And my son, who's a Boilermaker, will no doubt be sitting on Sue's side of the arena during that game. But I like the Hoosiers' chances. I'll tell you what, I think Oak and Buck and games notwithstanding, I love to see the athletic programs of both these institutions coming on strong, but it's great seeing IU come back too.
Well, Congressman, thank you for your time, and we are going to head out listening to Congressman Pence's latest ad for his run for governor. Congressman, thank you for your time.
Thank you both, and I really appreciate being on the Gillespie Show, and I look forward to being back again and again.
Oh, we will definitely have you back, sir. You're listening
Thanks
to Gillespie.
So much.
Yeah, sorry there, Susie.
That's okay.
You've been listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back after these messages.
I love hard work. Growing up, I pumped gas, I baled hay. But after I finished school with a young wife and a baby on the way, I found myself out of work. We got through by tightening our belts, like Hoosiers have done over the last few years. I want Indiana to be known everywhere as the state that works, with better jobs, bigger paychecks, and unlimited opportunities. I know the pain of losing a job. That's why I'll always fight for yours.
Mike Pence for governor.
And Welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. With me, as always, is the Smoozy Q.
Hello.
And our special guest this segment, we just got off the phone with Congressman Mike Pence, who is running for governor of Indiana. Now we talk with Richard Murdoch, who is the Senate candidate for the Republicans here in Indiana. It's a Hoosier show, but these races have national implications, people. And so that's why we're having them on. And Richard, thanks for being on this week.
Great to be back with you, Josh. Always a pleasure.
Yes. Well, this is the second time we've had you since your miraculous upset. And it wasn't just a miracle. It was huge. No disrespect to our current sitting senator, but you crushed him in the primary by 20 points.
It was an amazing win, without question. I never doubted that we would not be successful. I always thought we would win, but I never imagined we'd win by 22 points, which was the margin when everything was counted. So it was pretty amazing.
Just mind-boggling, in all honesty. I mean, and it was an amazing victory for you. It seemed as if there were some lingering hard feelings from the primary, but this week, we were talking a little bit off the air. You've had an incredible week this week, this past week. Senator Lugar actually invited you to the U.S. Senate to meet with him and Senator Coates, as well as their Senate colleagues. How did that go?
Well, let me just set it up and say it was a very humbling, very kind thing that happened. On every Tuesday, all the Republican members of the United States Senate get together at 12:30 for a lunch and a little policy discussion. And I was in D.C., had several meetings. One previous meeting was with Senator Coates, and he said, you know, you're going to be joining me today at our policy lunch. And I thought, well, that's great. And about the time we were walking in, he said, by the way, I want you to know, Senator Lugar has asked that he might be the one to introduce you. And I was totally stunned. So we walked in the room. I think 44 of the 47 Republican senators were there. Senator Barrasso from Wyoming called the meeting to order and then called on Senator Lugar for the introduction. And it was incredibly kind, incredibly gracious, and very, very much appreciated.
Well, a lot of people have seen that kind of as a for lack of a better term, that you guys kind of kissed and made up. The Politico headline was that you guys buried the hatchet. What can you address these rumors that there was bad blood between you guys? Because I never necessarily when you were campaigning, you always spoke extremely highly of Senator Lugar.
That's right, and even on the night of our victory, you know, I started that occasion off by asking every one of the several hundred people who were in the room to join us with a round of applause to have a bit of a tribute to Senator Lugar. Mm-hmm. And indeed, when I spoke the other day after his introduction, I made the comment that Hoosiers often wonder what does it mean to be a Hoosier, and at least my definition is to be a Hoosier means you've always got a sense of hospitality, you always have a bit of grace and graciousness, and you always have an optimistic view toward the future. And I said those are the kind of things that Senator Lugar just displayed, and we really appreciate it. I don't know that there was any particular hard feelings. It's always tough to lose an election. I've lost elections before, and I think Senator Lugar, while he was certainly disappointed, I think as time's gone by, he's come to realize that if it had been one or two points, maybe he wouldn't feel quite the way he did. But clearly it was not that he did any one thing wrong. It was just there was a sense it was time for something different. And I think that may be, in fact, why as a little time's gone by, he was able to make that introduction to my betterment. And certainly, again, it was a very gracious thing for him to do.
Sure. Well, what else did you experience while you were meeting with what we hope are definitely some of your future colleagues? Obviously, kind of coming off of Ted Cruz's victory in Texas, there was a lot of excitement amongst, you know, the labeled true conservatives. There's been a lot of excitement about your race and Attorney General Cruz's race. From conservatives and Tea Party backers, they're very excited about you. So, what kind of reception outside of what you met with Senator Lugar was it like out in D.C.?
Well, it was very, very nice. Senator Cornyn, Rob Portman from Ohio, Dan Coates all agreed to come in. They're going to be coming into Indianapolis, and I'm not sure of the date yet, but we have worked out a date. All of them have agreed to come in. As you know, I think Senator Rubio has already been in, so he helped make a few introductions as well, as did Rand Paul. A week ago when I was down at 3PAC, Senator DeMint, Rand Paul, and Mike Lee were all there, and I've had the occasion to meet all of them individually. So they were very kind. And I have to tell you, I really sense that within that body, within those 47 senators, they recognize as the wind is blowing this time, there is a more conservative mood within the Republican Party. In fact, just last week I was doing a radio interview with Mandy Connell, who's on WHAS out of Louisville, and during the interview she actually mentioned to me that Mitch McConnell will be speaking to the statewide Tea Party gathering in Kentucky in a few weeks.
Really?
Yeah, I was fascinated. That's the first I'd heard that. So it tells me that Leader McConnell as well is taking the Tea Party very seriously and looking for input. I felt very good about that.
Well, as he should. Well, speaking of continued news on the Murdoch front, a recent independent poll conducted by Rasmussen came out this past week that had you basically in a statistical tie with Congressman Joe Donnelly, your general election opponent. You were up 42-40 with 11% undecided. From what I gather, even though it was a 2 percentage point, you know, we're in the margin of error, but this actually had you in the lead for the first time since the primary, correct?
Well, there's been some other polls that have shown us in the lead. Certainly the polling that we've done has continued to show us in the lead. But I think the more amazing thing is, for all the negative ads that Mr. Donnelly's been running, the fact that we're still in the lead, even margin of error with those kind of numbers. Clearly, he knows he has to run from his record. He's trying to put labels on me, trying to define me as someone, frankly, that isn't very accurate. I'm certainly someone different than what he's trying to portray. But he knows he cannot come forward and say, oh, by the way, Hoosiers, I'm that guy who voted for Obamacare. I'm the guy who was one of the two Pac-12. He can't come forward and say, you know, I'm that guy who voted for the bailouts, voted for TARP, voted for card check, and voted for Obamacare twice, and hope to get elected. So he's trying anything he can right now to try to keep the polling closed up until Labor Day, and then I suspect if it's even close then, he's going to run to George Soros and say, oh, look, I've got a chance of winning. Give me $5 million or $10 million in a super PAC, and then he'll really go on the attack. So we keep plugging away every day. We think there's a Republican wind blowing, but we know we have to work right until 6 p.m. Central Time on November 6th, and we're prepared to do that.
Well, you know what? He can't run from his record. I mean, seriously, he has a record that coincides with what Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid would want him to do. And when he came into office January 4th, 2007, the national debt was just over $8 trillion. We've almost doubled it since he came into office. I mean, he cannot stand on being an independent-minded Democrat when he has carried the water of Nancy Pelosi, and he'd do just the same with Harry Reid. I don't get where he comes off, honestly.
Well, he's trying to do the political chameleon type trick. It's not going to work. You know, just yesterday I had the honor to, for the second time actually, to introduce Mitt Romney to an audience. And as part of my introduction, I made the point, you know, Governor Romney, I'm proud to stand here with you. I'm proud to have our picture taken together. I'm proud to help you. I appreciate the help you're giving me. And I find it curious that my opponent won't get anywhere near his party's presidential nominee. The last thing he wants to do is be photographed around Barack Obama, because Joe Donnelly is carrying that record. And when the Obama picture shows up with the Donnelly picture and the record of the two of them comes into play, there's no way he can win in this state.
Richard, it's good to talk to you tonight. You mentioned that you had the opportunity yesterday to introduce Governor Romney. Tell us a little bit about what was that event and how did that go?
Well, Governor Romney had previously been scheduled to do a significant fundraiser in southwest Indiana, and we gave him a call earlier in the week as his travel schedule became a little bit more clear after returning from Europe and the Middle East. Asked if he would find a few minutes to spend with us, and he was most gracious in doing so. So at a local hangout, which my wife and I know very well, called the Barbecue Shack down in Evansville, the governor stopped by and we had a nice crowd outside, and he worked the rope line and got to speak to those folks, and we went inside, and before getting some of Indiana's finer barbecue, he also took the time to make a few comments and to work the room a little bit. So he, you know, I'm really fired up for his candidacy. I'm convinced he is the right person at the right time. And as I've told many audiences, we never would have had Ronald Reagan if we hadn't had Jimmy Carter. And we've had Barack Obama now for almost 4 years. I don't think the public's going to go back and look for more of that. And I think we might see yet some of the attributes of Ronald Reagan in Mitt Romney, and I'm excited about this election cycle.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, I'm sorry to cut you off there, Susie, but Richard, I know that you have been going around the state opening victory centers all across the state with Congressman Pence.
Indeed.
And the congressional candidates. What has the mood been like when they're talking? I have to imagine that they're bringing up the presidential election. What's the mood of the electorate out there?
Well, across Indiana, they know, Hoosiers know that they made an error 4 years ago. You know, if Susie and Joshua, 4 years ago, this very moment, we were having this discussion, I'm sure we would have agreed there was no possible way that Barack Obama could possibly win 11 electoral votes out of this state in 2008. But he did. He became the first Democrat to win this state since LBJ. And even that day, as he was winning, he didn't break 50%. He was 49-2. But even that day, Mitch Daniels received almost 70% of the vote. So Hoosiers do split their tickets. So one of the main messages I've been making when we've been cutting the ribbons on those victory centers is just to remind people that just because Barack Obama may not be popular among Hoosiers right now doesn't mean we can let our guard down. We have to work very hard for every race, for every congressional seat, for the U.S. Senate seat, for the gubernatorial seat, for all those Indiana House and Indiana Senate seats. You know, again, the wind's blowing the right way. There's not much enthusiasm from the Democrats out there, but we cannot take anything for granted. That's what the victory centers are all about, making those phone calls to make sure we turn out our voters.
That's great. Richard, you also mentioned having been down in Freepac recently, could you tell us a little bit about that experience?
Well, that was a great experience. I got to speak to about 13,000 people. It was a different one in that it was in the American Airlines Center. It's the first time I've ever had that occasion to do the so-called theater in the round, where you stand in the center and keep turning and turning and turning to try to make eye contact with everyone. But it was a fascinating evening. There were so many great speakers there, including, as I mentioned before, Rand Paul, Jim DeMint, Mike Lee, a good friend of mine, Deneen Borelli, who always lights up the audience, and just a fabulous way to kick off the Glenn Beck event that came the next 2 days. But those folks who were there were fired up in part because of Ted Cruz. You know, at that point, we were just 3 or 4 days ahead of his primary election. And when all the speaking was done, Ted and I and those three senators did a news conference jointly. And, hey, I was thrilled to death because the first question to Ted Cruz was, did he see anything that happened in Indiana in my primary that might be reflected in Texas? And I hope all my Hoosier activists appreciate this, because Ted Cruz immediately came back and said, yeah, I'll tell you the example. Is after Richard Murdoch did what he did in May in Indiana, my people in Texas said, if they did it in Indiana, we can do it here. Let's just work a little bit harder. So Ted was very kind and given a lot of Hoosiers credit for that, and we look forward to working with him over the next 93 days and even more in the U.S. Senate.
Richard, as we're coming to a close here of the segment, kind of give us an idea of what is going to be coming up in your campaign here in the next few weeks, and where people can find out more about you and get involved.
Well, to that second part first, we always encourage folks to go to richardmurdoch.com. It's M-O-U-R-D-O-C-K, richardmurdoch.com. But they can sign up at our website. We've now got over 7,000 volunteers, and that's folks across Indiana who are doing everything from working the phone banks, going door to door, to putting up yard signs for us. And, of course, you can donate there, too. And that's a major thing that we have to ask people to do. We can take nothing for granted. We know the Democrats are going to try to steal this seat, raise a bunch of money, so we've got to be fighting them dollar for dollar. In the next several weeks, we're going to be all over the state. I'm up in northeast Indiana early this week, back down south in Davies County later this week. And we're meeting people, we're talking to folks, and we're also making a lot of those stops in the local newspaper offices and with the media. You know, we've got to keep good visibility. We've got to make sure that this message and the definition that Joe Donnelly's trying to set as to who I am is not one that's going to be accepted as fact, because it isn't fact. Again, he's got to hide from his record to try to make me look like I'm someone I'm not. But that, too, is why the grassroots efforts are so important. When people see a yard sign in someone else's yard and they know that person, they think, you know what, that person's committed to that guy, so maybe what I'm hearing isn't true. And that's no small thing. So we need that grassroots support always.
Absolutely. And I encourage everyone to follow Richard, especially on Twitter, at Richard Murdoch. Everyone, pay attention to this race. It may be an Indiana race, but Richard's race is also a national race when you think about it. We're talking about control of the U.S. Senate. When we're looking at a statistical tie right now, at least according to Rasmussen, we need Richard to win this seat. This is a race that Democrats nationally and in Indiana are targeting. Richard is walking around, essentially, you know, with Democrats following him. They want to take him down, and we cannot have that happen. We will not let that happen. Richard needs to be victorious in November so that he can help repeal Obamacare next year with the Republican Senate, with the Republican House, and, Lord willing, a Republican president.
Amen.
Richard, thanks for being on this week. We hope to have you on again soon.
We'll look forward to it, and thank you for the kind words. And you're right, it is a national race, and we cannot let Harry Reid go another day as leader in the United States Senate.
Absolutely. And for Susie Moore in this segment, this is Josh Gillespie. You're listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. We've been talking to Richard Murdoch, candidate for U.S. Senate here in Indiana. He is a Republican. We hope that you'll stick around for more coming up next. We'll be talking with Pete Seat, who is the communications director for the state party here in Indiana. Pete's got the lowdown on all the races going on, from Richard's race to Mike Pence's race to everything else. And so we'll be talking with Pete next. And remember, RichardMurdoch.com. Again, you're listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back after this.
The Supreme Court made one thing clear. Obamacare will raise our taxes. But President Obama and Congressman Donnelly weren't honest with us. Obamacare cuts Medicare services to seniors by $500 billion and causes businesses to drop millions of workers from their health care coverage. We didn't ask for this. I'm Richard Murdoch, and I approve this message because I'll vote to repeal the Obamacare tax. Congressman Donnelly won't.
I beg the sun to shed me some light.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. With me, as always, is Susie Moore. And our guest this segment, that's right, we have a third guest. It is a packed week, people, is the communications director of the Indiana State GOP. He was also a former deputy press secretary to the Bush White House. We're not talking Bush 41. We're talking Bush 43. This is Pete Seat. Pete, how you doing?
I'm great, Josh. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Just fine. So, Pete, we've had on so far Mike Pence and Richard Murdoch. We've hit the Hoosier stuff hard. So because of your national experience, you've been on Fox News, you've been on MSNBC. We want to know how Chuck Todd really is. but just briefly, I want to get your kind of a quick perspective from you on Republicans' chances here in Indiana. Just ever so briefly.
Well, I think here in Indiana, it's going to be a banner year for Republicans again. I mean, the momentum from 2010 is still at our backs. And, you know, we're looking at the numbers from these victory centers. You know, we got 10 victory centers around the state. We are one of only a handful, I think maybe three states in the country, who are not targeted states by the presidential campaign, yet have a victory center operation the way Indiana has set one up, with 10 offices around the state, dozens upon dozens of volunteers every night making calls. We've already surpassed 200,000 calls, which is really unheard of for this point in the campaign. So we've got great momentum, and as you know, Governor Romney was in Evansville over the weekend. A really excited crowd came out to see him, folks inside the barbecue place he was at, folks lining the street outside to meet him. So we're feeling good about our chances up and down the ticket.
There has been talk that Republicans, at least at the state house level, they currently hold a 60-40 majority. That they're kind of hoping they're not banking on it, but they kind of see an opportunity to gain a supermajority at the Indiana state house level, where they have one at the Indiana State Senate. Do you think something like that is possible, or is that just kind of shooting for the moon?
I think it's within the realm of possibility, but if we fall short of that, I know a hotel for the Democrats that they can chill out in Illinois if they're interested. But it's certainly within the realm of possibility. Look, Lake County, Indiana, has not been kind to Republicans over the years.
No,
there's
know
no
Lake
way to
County
sugarcoat
well.
That, right?
Yeah.
We won in 2010 for the first time in 60 years a countywide office in Lake County. We are poised to, we potentially could win up to 4 state house seats in Lake County, Indiana.
You're
if
kidding.
That happens, we are on the road to 67 in the state house.
No, you're kidding me. 4 seats in Lake County?
There are 4 seats in play. I think 2 is a definite for us, but there are 4 in play. It could happen if the stars align correctly.
Wow. For our listeners who may not know, Lake County is basically the that's the region area that butts up against Chicago. So there's definitely been some riffraff, so to speak, up there in Lake County. The Chicago values sort of bleed over into Lake County. It's home of East Chicago, which is about as of a positive place as East St. Louis, in all honesty.
And you got that, and as you mentioned, the proximity to Chicago, I'm from Lake County, and I grew up watching Chicago news. So I always talk about 2008 and Obama. For a lot of people in that part of the state, Barack Obama was more of a senator for them than Dick Lugar or Evan Bayh were.
Really?
Because, well, that's who they saw on TV all the time. They saw Barack Obama. They saw, I guess Dick Durbin was in the Senate at the time, and that's who they identify with.
Yeah, but he was first elected in 2004 or something like that. He wasn't in Senate for...
Right. Right, but they identify with what's happening in Chicago because you never hear about what's happening in Indiana and Lake County.
No, that's true.
I mean, it's just the disconnect there is remarkable.
Wow.
And so for that reason, you know, the Democrat base, the mentality of comes over the border, and that's why there are so many Democrats in that part of the state. I mean, historically, at least in recent years, Lake County has had the second largest number of Republican votes by county in the state, but we're so largely drowned out by Democrats, doesn't do us any good to have that many votes.
Yeah. Well, kind of shifting gears here, earlier this year, you launched a blog that it covers both state and national politics called The Front Row Seat Creative. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it was actually a former colleague's idea that I used that title. I launched it. I'm a slacker on keeping up with it, so now that you mentioned it publicly, I guess I got
to
get back on it.
I hate to put you on the spot there, Pete.
It was really, you know, a lot of stuff was on my mind and going through my head, especially during the Republican presidential primary. And, you know, you mentioned at the outset about MSNBC. I'm fortunate every time I go to D.C., Chuck Todd welcomes me on his show, and I've had the opportunity to do a few other shows. So in the meantime, between D.C. trips, I kind of wanted to have an outlet and an opportunity to talk about national politics. And so I was doing it through the website. But, of course, the day job has been my priority and is starting to get busier and busier as we get closer to election day, so I've been slacking, but I'll get back on it.
Well, of course. I mean, trust me. I know what it's like to have a blog and kind of slack a bit. The fortunate thing for me is that I have others who write for me. So I can't, you know, if I happen to call mine the Dizzy Report, just to kind of play off the whole Dizzy Gillespie kind of thing. granted, we're not the same people, but still. But no, it's actually it's a really neat blog because, like I said at the outset, you focus on state and national policy, and with your experience working in the Bush White House, you really have a good solid feel for this stuff.
Well, what I really wanted to do, and that was kind of my goal with this whole thing, was to drive home the disconnect in what I saw between the conventional wisdom of the Beltway and what you and I and other voters here in the heartland feel and see every single day. And to bring that, and I hoped that because of that experience that I had in D.C., that I would be able to get some extra eyeballs on the site and to see that and realize that sometimes this conventional wisdom that tends to drive the narrative every day on cable news talk shows is really out of left field compared to what we're seeing on the ground. One instance I wrote about on the site. It was during the primary. You know, the Beltway chatter was all about how those who supported Newt Gingrich or Rick Perry or Rick Santorum or whomever were doing it out of spite, the fact that they didn't like Mitt Romney. Mm-hmm. But when you actually talk to people, they liked Newt Gingrich. They liked Rick Santorum. They liked the candidate that they were supporting. Mm-hmm. And but it's what the Beltway chatter was. It's what everyone was talking about. You know, once someone says it, it just becomes this vicious echo chamber that recycles itself every 24 hours. So I was, you know, trying to penetrate that a little bit and get some folks to pay attention to it. And it served its purpose for a while there until I, of course, as I said, started slacking off.
I think we can all understand that, Pete. You mentioned earlier.
But I don't feel like bad about it. No.
Don't feel too bad, but sure, get back to it. It looks like a neat blog. I enjoyed looking over it, and one of the things it might have been that you tweeted about it, and you mentioned it earlier in the show. You were in Evansville this weekend with Romney at the barbecue. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Sure. Yeah, he came out. You know, he originally was coming for a fundraiser in Evansville. This was the fourth trip he's made to Indiana this election cycle. He's hit pretty much every corner of the state. He was in Schererville, twice to Indianapolis, now Evansville. But he also was able to squeeze in a campaigning stop for Richard Murdoch, or who's on the show earlier, and talk a little bit about that race and talk about, obviously, the presidential race. It was a really excited crowd. I mean, once word spread in Evansville, people were calling the barbecue joint all night Friday, trying to find out how they could get in. Starting at 8 a.m. Friday morning, people were parked outside the barbecue shack holding signs. And one lady was holding up a sign that said, "Mitt, we need you." And they were coming up to us. You know, they could tell that we kind of had something to do with the event. Shaking our hands, saying thank you for what you're doing for this country. I mean, people are frustrated with what this president has done and his failures. The promise is broken. I mean, you guys know all about this. I don't have to mm-hmm. go through it. But just to see the excitement about this candidacy, again, which is completely contrary to the conventional wisdom of the Beltway. But when you're actually on the ground, you witness it firsthand, people are excited about the opportunity to actually see some change in Washington.
Pete, this race is, at least the presidential race, is undoubtedly going to be close up until Election Day. I think probably a lot of prognosticators, at least within the mainstream media, probably would say that this late race currently leans Obama, but Mitt has obviously had some momentum. He had his third straight month of outraising President Obama. What do you see that the Romney campaign needs to do here within the last 93 days or so to basically put them over the top?
Well, there's been a shift in Romney's messaging, and not really a shift, but maybe a he's distilled his message down to 5 points. Mm-hmm. You know, there was all this talk of a 59-point economic plan, which was great. It was detailed. You know, the media is always talking about, oh, we need more details. And then when they get it, they get the details. They say, oh, it's not simple enough. I mean, you can never win, right?
Exactly.
But now he's got it distilled down. He talked about it both at the barbecue shack and at the fundraiser Saturday evening. And it's very simple: energy independence and ensuring that we can unleash our what we have in coal and nuclear and wind and solar, helping small businesses, repealing Obamacare. All he's got two other planks that I'm blanking on what they are right now. I guess it's not that simple. But
you pulled a Rick Perry there, Pete.
Right, and I did.
But he had five.
That's right.
That's hard.
Yeah,
he had
five. Yeah, five. That's exactly. It's hard. I got three. But the point is, he's going to drive that home, and unfortunately, you know, these economic numbers are not getting any better.
No, they're not.
We're sputtering along. This president has not created the jobs he promised. They're not happening, and Mitt Romney's got a record to run on, what he did in Massachusetts, what he did to turn around the Olympics. And to your point about it's very close now, look at the beating that Mitt Romney has been taking. In all these battleground states, Barack Obama's campaign and his Democrat allies have just been bludgeoning Mitt Romney's character, his integrity, misconstruing his record. And what? He's leading in some polls. Romney's leading in some polls, or tied, or just barely behind. It's not having the effect that they thought it was going to have. And I think come convention, when more Americans have an opportunity to get to know Mitt Romney, what he stands for, and be introduced to the VP nominee when he or she is announced, we're going to be in a great position to win this.
Do you are you willing to go on record on who you might bet would be the VP choice?
No, but I'm going to make a bold prediction right here on the show.
All right.
I'm going to make a bold prediction.
Right.
The nominee will be announced before the end of August. That is my prediction.
Oh, well, thanks, Pete.
Going out on a limb there.
That's huge. Okay, final question for you. As someone who's been in the communications game quite a long time, even though you're younger than me, but you're a veteran, what's Chuck Todd really like?
Chuck is one of my favorite, not just reporters, but people. He's a great, fun guy. We always have a good time off camera. And obviously, he is one of the smartest political analysts out there. He knows his stuff better than most, and demographics and electoral maps, and you name it. He is sharp as they come. So it's an honor to know him and to go on his show every once in a while and be able to help him bring the news of politics to the masses.
All right. Well, very cool, Pete. Well, thank you for being on this week. Hey, where can they find you on the internet if they want to follow, know the inside of what's going on with Pete Seat?
Absolutely. As you mentioned, thefrontrowseat.com. Also on Twitter, @ Pete Seat. I'm very, very close to 2,000 followers, so let's help make that happen.
Let's push Pete over the top, people.
Let's do it.
@ Pete Seat. Pete, thanks again for being on this week.
Thank you both. I enjoyed it.
And I also want to thank our other guests, Congressman Mike Pence, who is running for governor of the state of Indiana. Also, Richard Murdoch, who is running for U.S. Senate from the state of Indiana. Guys, we got strong conservatives here in Indiana. Mark, hey, where can everybody find you on the internet?
MWarner95 on Twitter.
Can they find you anywhere else? Do you blog?
HoosierAccess.com.
All right.
I haven't blogged in like months.
Months? Let's change that to years.
Probably a year, yeah.
Probably that. Plus, Mark, we give Mark props. He did schedule all the guests tonight, so thank you, Mark.
He did. Great job with that.
Yes, thank you, Mark. Susie, where can they find you?
They can find me on Twitter @ SmoothieQ and on my blog @ qwithaview.wordpress.com.
Fantastic. You can find me @ Josh Gillespie on the Twitters. Also, joshgillespie.com, where you can find all the previous podcasts of this show. You will be able to find this show tomorrow on joshgillespie.com, hopefully at 12:30 if I do everything right. Coming up next is the Snark Factor with Fingers Malloy and the Snark Factor Players. For Mark Warner and Susie Moore, this is Ben Gillespie. I'm Josh Gillespie. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week. Have a good one. So long.
It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?